Well, I feel like I'm surrounded by giants in this room, all the kingdom-minded businesses that I heard about. But there's a special group of rock stars here, and that's the concrete guys. So if you're a concrete guy, would you just stand up one more time? And Matt, that includes you. You need to get on your feet as well. Matt Zook actually builds tables out of concrete. How cool is that? So look at all these concrete guys. Would you just give them a hand real quick? They're the true rock stars. So I was a concrete guy growing up, and I always have a special place in my heart for concrete guys. And typically, nobody wants to be a concrete guy. They say it's awfully hard work. But those of us that do it, we love it, don't we? All right? So I just had to give a shout-out to my concrete friends. I believe my mission is that we are called to lead, love, and serve like Jesus to change the world in the marketplace and in every sphere of influence that we have. As a result, our legacy as business leaders will be to leave the world a better place than the one that we found it, than the one we were born into. How many of you, by the way, remember Y2K? Anybody remember? Okay, because I know some of you are young enough that you were barely a figment in your parents' imagination, but most of us remember Y2K, and we remember the world was going to crash and burn, and it didn't. But around that time, there was a large leadership conference up in the city that I now live, Chicago, Illinois. And the pastor that ran that conference had a special relationship with the president of the United States of America. The president had gone through a very bad time in his presidency. It was called the Lewinsky scandal. How many of you remember that? All right. And as a result of the Lewinsky scandal, they brought in this pastor to help counsel the president. And he said, you know, I'm going to use my relationship with the president to bring him onto my conference and interview him on leadership. And so he did that. And the room was filled with thousands of pastors, Christian leaders. And the air was obviously sucked out of the room as the president walked in at the height of the Lewinsky scandal. The president was asked a question by the pastor, which was not a softball. It was, in fact, a pretty brutal hardball. And he started off this way. He said, Mr. President, when the world, the American world, sees you on a Sunday morning walking into church with a Bible under your arm, because, you know, President Clinton was televised as he would walk into church, they think you're doing it for political show. Would you speak to all these pastors about that? And Mr. President, Mr. Bill Clinton said, well, you know, I've been going to church for 30 years. If it's a show, at least it's a consistent show. Great answer, Mr. President. And then the pastor went on to more, you know, softballs to lob at the president. There were things like, you know, who inspired you in your leadership? Who were the ones that impacted you the most? And of course, President Clinton talked about Gandhi from India, the great servant leader. He talked about Nelson Mandela from South Africa. And then he talked about Kennedy from Massachusetts, can't forget him, and Martin Luther King, Martin King Luther Jr., all great leaders in their own right. And then, of course, it was time to whisk the president off the stage, and security took him. And the next guy up was a man by the name of Ken Blanchard. Now, Ken Blanchard came back to faith later in his life. He's the guy that wrote the One-Minute Manager. He's kind of the management leadership guru of our time. And he believes that the reason he's been successful is that everything's been based on the model of leading like Jesus. And it's a book with a friend of mine by the name of Phil Hodges called Lead Like Jesus. And as he got up, he decided to play with the crowd a little bit. And he said, don't you think the president's legacy would have looked a little bit different had he mentioned Jesus of Nazareth as his leadership role model? And of course, everybody clapped and cheered and said, yes, now we can pick on the president because we felt so uncomfortable. And Blanchard turned right around at the crowd and said, ladies and gentlemen, he's been in church for the last 30 years, and he's never heard it from you guys. Now, I realize this is a business conference. We're not all, a few of us that are maybe in church leadership here. But don't you think if we would look at Jesus as a leadership role model, our legacies would look a little different? And I think this has a lot to do with us in business as well. As some of you already stated, work as worship, business as mission, BAM. One of my friends in Asia would go to this conference in Malaysia, and this is a growing movement around the world that we're using business as mission. And I believe we have a lot to learn from Jesus in terms of a legacy, how we treat our people, how we relate to the world around us, how we serve. We need to lead, love, and serve to change our world. And that will determine our legacy. How many of you remember Bernie Ebbers? Okay, a few hands. How many of you remember Kenneth Lay? These names ringing a few bells. So these guys ran WorldCom and Enron, the big megacorps that crashed and burned and basically ripped off billions of dollars worth of retirement funds for those who worked at those companies. And what a lot of people don't know about Bernard Ebbers and Kenneth Lay is that they were both Sunday school teachers. And yet somehow their leadership in the church and their relationship, supposed relationship with Jesus, did not translate into the business world. And so we know that this has a lot to do with business, how we lead ourselves and how we impact those around us. John Maxwell has once said that everything rises and falls on leadership, and I think he's absolutely correct. My concern, however, is what type of leadership we embrace. What type of leadership are we using to succeed in life, whether it's at work or in our relationships and community or at home? And therefore, I believe in a leadership model based on that of Jesus of Nazareth. We usually leave him in church world, but I don't think there should be a sacred secular academy. I think we ought to be, as the one person said, doing church Monday through Friday. And basing our leadership model on the greatest leader, and of course, a lot of people have a problem with Jesus as a leader. They would argue against him because he only had, you know, 12 guys that followed him. One turned out really, really bad, and the church didn't get started till after he left. So why would we follow Jesus? I spent a lot more time on this subject in another one of my events. I'm not going to do a whole lot on it this time, but I want to lay this as the groundwork, the foundation for everything else that I talk about this weekend. Jesus is my serving leadership role model. He is the best model for us in business. And some people also think that serving leadership is on par with letting the inmates run the prison. That's another problem that some folks have with this idea of serving leadership. Just let people do jolly well what they please. But that is also an incorrect understanding of serving leadership. Because serving leadership can really be broken down into two roles, a shepherding role and a stewarding role. Serving leaders initially have a shepherding role in that they cast vision. They provide that direction from the top. Every one of us here as a business has a compelling vision. Some of us shared that tonight. And we have a purpose, we have a direction, and that's always shared from the top. Serving leaders cast that from the top. The traditional pyramid stands. Serving leaders then, like Jesus, have a compelling vision which they cast from the top down. But they don't only just cast a vision from the top, they also provide the resources and the training in order for their people to be successful. And so if their people mess up, they look in the mirror and they say, the buck stops with me. I think Jim Collins gave us that metaphor, the window in the mirror. And they take responsibility. They're in charge. They have a very clear, compelling vision. And if their people mess up, they say, I didn't give them the resources. I didn't train them well enough. It's my fault that they're not successful. And they always look out the window. I loved what one of the companies here said tonight. We have an incredible team. And that's a serving leader. It's not about what I do as a leader. It's what we do. None of us has it all together, but together we have it all. And then the second role is that of stewardship. Stewardship is where we are to accomplish our mission and our vision, and we do that by empowering our people. We're now at the bottom, and we're doing everything we can to make our people successful. We're there to help them accomplish the mission. And so the traditional pyramid gets flipped, and now we're equipping and empowering our people to fulfill that mission in our organization. The leaders at the bottom, now serving up. Serving leaders keep their people accountable. They equip, they coach, they mentor, they correct to keep everyone aligned with the vision which was cast from the top. And Jim Collins, how many of you have read his book, Good to Great, by the way? Let me just see your hands. One of the best business books I've ever read. And in that epic book, he talks about level five leaders. Level five leaders are the ones that ran the great companies, not the good companies, but the great companies. And all the companies that he studied, Jim will actually say in his book, I didn't want to go with leadership. I didn't want to talk about leadership. Leadership is overused. But he said, we kept coming back that every one of those great companies was led by an incredible leader. And then he broke it down and said, this is what the leader was like. He was one who blended an extreme personal humility with an intense professional will. Somebody with extreme high level of humility blended with an intense professional will. They blend the two. They have this indomitable will and this incredible humility to go along with it. They were incredibly ambitious, but their ambition was first and foremost for the cause, Jim Collins discovered, the organization and its purpose, and not for themselves. And that takes us back to Jesus. If there was ever one that walked this planet that had incredible levels of humility and a high, extreme ambition to fulfill his Father's will, it was none other than Jesus Christ. I have come to do my Father's will. And nothing would dissuade him. Nothing would get him off that course. In Luke 9:51, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. One of the versions says he fixed his gaze. He set his face. And the disciples knew exactly what was coming down. They knew he was going to be put to death. They knew what was coming. In fact, one of them, Thomas, said, let's just go up and die with him. You know, they knew that things were going down. Now, why am I sharing all of this in my very lengthy introduction to employee engagement on elevating our culture? Because I believe that Jesus' serving leadership model is the foundation for everything that we do in business, in life, church, community, home. The model of Jesus, having a vision, a mission, and having the extreme, indomitable will to perform and complete what we have been called to do, whether it's in business, in family, in community, in church. We are called to lead, love, and serve like Jesus. I want to give you a personal example from my own life. I directed a nonprofit for 10 years in Southeast Asia, and I was a young leader. I learned leadership by doing leadership. I think a lot of us kind of learn business by doing business. We learn leading by doing leading. And in 1997, I was leading this young organization focused on unreached people groups. We were based in Chiang Mai, Thailand. My wife and I moved over in 1997. Our first team joined us in 1998 to work with us, and they were good friends of ours. I remember our first team meeting. My wife wasn't there. I was there with my five really good friends, and the tension was so thick, you could have cut the air in the room with a knife. Why? Because I had a wonderful plan for their lives. Anybody know any leaders like that? They say jump, and you say, how high? You've got a wonderful plan. I was very top-down in my approach. I had a wonderful plan, and I didn't understand how to build a thriving environment in which they could succeed. I didn't know how to really, truly lead, and I certainly didn't know how to listen. Listening was not in my wheelhouse, but thankfully, a mentor came along in my life by the name of Dr. Jim Shockey, and he invited me to an event called Lead Like Jesus. He's the one that first introduced me to this concept of serving leadership. And everything changed for me. I can honestly say that. In fact, a year later, one of our staff guys came up to me and said, wow, Luke, your leadership has really changed. You now listen to us, he said. Unfortunately, it took my family 15 years to figure that out. Yeah, you can laugh at that. You can fool some of the people some of the time. You can't fool your family anytime. The reality is, no leader is microwaved, right? We all are in this journey, and it wasn't for at least 15 years that till I started hearing family members say, yeah, Luke, you're actually a serving dad, a serving husband, and I'm still got a long way to go. But yeah, this is my family. We love the mountains of Colorado, and I love to hold one thing over my family, and that is that I've climbed one more than they have. So it makes the old guy look a little bit better than all, because people always look at my picture of my family and say, so which one really is your wife? And I get it. The old guy's never a hard one to pick up. So Josiah Zimmerman is the newest addition, married my oldest daughter, Brittany. I really should have started over here with my forgotten middle child, because she tells me that all the time. Did she remind you of that, Dot? And Larry in Costa Rica a few weeks ago. She's always been my forgotten middle child. And she's traveled more with me than any of my other kids. Jamin is my youngest. He's a tall one. I'm on a rock, okay? He's a 6-footer, and I'm barely 5'5" 3/4" on a good day. I got it down to the quarter inch. In any case, leadership, serving leadership, has been quite a journey for me. The best one on there is my wife, Amy. You're probably going, why did you not introduce her first? Well, guess what? We are empty nesters and having the time of our lives. Any other empty nesters here? I see those hands. Yeah. And it is awesome. Okay. For those of you, the best is yet to come. We love our kids. We really do. But we are having the time of our lives. We moved to Chicago about 7 months ago. She's currently in North Carolina. She's working with an organization called PrayerCast, and she had to do some training down in North Carolina, so she's there, I'm here, and we'll be back together again Saturday night. Well, I am here to talk to you about employee engagement. In your notes, if you want to open up your folders on the left-hand side, you can pull out the employee engagement notes. If you are a tech geek and you've got a digital device and you're like, you know, Luke, I really don't want to write anything with a pen, you can actually go to your web browser, go to that website right there, and download the digital edition of the notes. And you will get the same content that everybody else is looking at. Engaging your employees and elevating the culture of your company requires a blend of casting vision from the top and empowering from the bottom. Serving leadership is the model that will truly engage your people. It takes humility to listen and the willpower to push through what really matters. People are motivated by both. They want to be part of a thriving business. Nobody wants to be part of a failing business. They want to be going somewhere. They want a leader who knows where they are going, and they also want to contribute to its success. Gone are the days of the Industrial Revolution where we just showed up to work, put in our time. And in fact, I would say probably even back in the Industrial Revolution, there were a lot of people who wanted to be part of the decision-making, part of the process, and didn't want to just be somebody who showed up and worked and went home. But a lot of people want to contribute to the success. They want to be engaged and motivated and seen as important in the company's decisions. So we'll be talking about that. Zig Ziglar once said that you will get all you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want. And Zig was not saying it from a motivation of selfish, I want to help people so they help me. He was just simply saying, if you and I have a serving paradigm, if we're out to help people, if we are there to serve others, it just reciprocates automatically. Enough people that you help will want to help you in return. But I'd like to rephrase his phrase just a little bit. Slightly. You will get what you want when you help others get what they truly want. See, the question is, what do people really want when they come to work for you? A lot of times we think it's money. It's all about the paycheck. And motivation is about helping people get what they truly want. And we have to understand what's behind the money. They might say money, a nice car, or a vacation home on a beach, but what they really want is financial freedom. So there's no worry and anxiety about tomorrow. That's really what they want. They want peace of mind. It's not just about more money for them. And that nice car, that nice set of wheels, what they really want is significance in the eyes of other people. They want their significant relationships to look at that great set of wheels and say, wow, you've arrived. You're now driving an Audi, okay? How many of you have an Audi, by the way? Let's just see if anyone has arrived here. Okay, I don't drive the Audi either. And that vacation home on the beach, what they really want is rest. They want relaxation. They want connection with family, right? That's what people really want. What's behind the money? It's actually about their significant relationships. And so when people come and work for your company, it's primarily about relationships. My friend Dave tells me about a company that he was working with, and he asked the guy that owned the company, it was a fairly large operation, and he said, what's your most important asset? And the guy, you know, thought for a moment, and then he said, you know, it has to be our equipment. And Dave said, no, it's not your equipment. And he kept naming all these different pieces and parts of his company, all the way down to his pickup truck. Does anybody know what your most important asset is at your company? Your employees, yeah, your people, right? It's about relationships, and people want to have significant relationships both at work and at home. So understanding what is behind someone's stated goals is ultimately important, and it often comes back to relationships. Quick story about relationships in the management of your people. I was working with Walnut Creek Foods just down the road here in Holmes County. And Ben Raber, who was working with them back then, I don't think he's with them anymore, he wrote me a note after I did my Art of Listening presentation for his company in 2017. And here's what he wrote. He said, "Luke, a few years ago, I started what I call meet at the pump. I walk out to the fuel pump as the driver refills his truck. This is always a positive meeting where I encourage and give positive feedback, but most of all, I listen. This little meeting has transformed our team of 30 drivers and has given them a safe place to share their thoughts." Now, folks, that's not part of Ben's, or wasn't part of Ben's game plan. It wasn't part of his job description. And yet, he has taken time to be human, to walk out, and to simply listen to those guys, to invest in those relationships. And that has gone a long way in terms of engaging and motivating those drivers who work at Walnut Creek Foods. And you can believe it, if problems come up with those drivers, Ben will have the relational capital to deal with those problems when they come up. The Gallup organization published a study in 2013 called The State of the American Workplace, Employee Engagement Insights for U.S. Business Leaders. They discovered that only 30% of the U.S. workforce is actually really fully engaged in their work. That means that 70% people are checked out. More than twice the number of people are checked out as are those who are checked in. And in the global scene, the numbers are even more dismal. 87% of our global workforce is not fully engaged in their work. It's costing us billions, if not trillions, in our economy. People are not engaged. They're not fully engaged. In the USA alone, Gallup estimates that it's costing our economy on an annual basis between $450 and $550 billion per year. So let's ask some questions. Number one, how do we continue to build an engaging culture where people want to work, where they actually show up with excitement on Monday mornings? We've got these statements out in our culture like, "I hate Mondays," or "Thank God it's Friday." We've even turned that one into a restaurant. But how do we build an environment, a culture at work, where people want to show up and they're excited, just as excited coming on Monday as they are leaving on Friday? I think of the competitive job market just down the road here in Holmes County. In fact, we had a conversation about this over dinner tonight. One company that I worked with, a young man came to the president, and he said, "I'll take a pay cut to come work for you." Now, usually most people don't want to take pay cuts to go work when they're given a better offer elsewhere. But this one said, "I will take a pay cut to come work in your company because of your incredible environment. I want to work for you because you have built such an incredible environment in which to work." And I've worked for this company over the years. And every time I show up there, there's not people running around hurried. There's this contentment. There's a sense of peace in the environment. And they're actually doing really, really good business. And one of the things that this company does a lot, is they develop their people. They're very serious about developing their people. It's a great environment to work. The second question, how do we hire great people of character and competence and then integrate them into our company culture in a short amount of time? When the new kid on the block shows up and everyone else is telling the stories, right? And they're all laughing at the cultural jokes that are so, you know, common to that company. How do you get the new kid up to speed? How do you bring them up to speed in a short amount of time? Because that is an engagement issue. And then number three, how do we not take our people for granted, but actually help them reach their potential? You know, most business owners don't think about developing their people to their potential. I hired you to do this job, and we're not thinking about how can I actually take them to the ultimate potential that they could actually bring, whether that's here at work or beyond their work. And then finally, number four, how do we get our people to produce at high levels when money no longer motivates? The science folks actually suggests that the more complex, the higher a person goes in a company, the less money motivates. But I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll look at that a little bit later. How do we get people to produce when money no longer motivates? People with great wealth are not necessarily happier, according to Chris Ryan, author of Civilized to Death. And in his talk about the surprising psychology behind being rich, He actually says that the correlation between wealth and happiness levels off somewhere around $70,000. People are satisfied at 70 grand a year, believe it or not. And that, according to the data out there, at least it levels off around the 70,000 mark. Chris says that the most potent predictor of longevity and health, both the physical and mental, is whether someone feels embedded in a community of loving and supportive people. People want to be part of a family. They want to be part of the family at work, even as, you know, they say blood runs thicker than water, and our family relationships are so important. So they are at work, and our work families as well. Dr. Lori Santos from Yale and her popular happiness labs. I don't know if any of you are tracking with her and her happiness labs. She's got some interesting material out there. But she would also support that idea, what happiness is based on. So we need to get beyond money as the ultimate motivator. Just upping people's paychecks is not going to do it. And I know what some of you are thinking. I'm going to go back to work after this conference, and I'm just going to cut everybody's paycheck. Let me assure you, that's not the answer either, okay? We do have to set the right pay scale, but money is not the greatest motivator. A highly engaged workforce means the difference between a company that outperforms its competitors and one that fails to grow. In fact, companies with the top 25% engagement scores have significantly higher productivity, profitability, customer satisfaction, and ratings. And this is the big one, less employee turnover. Folks, it's costing us a lot of money every time we have to hire and fire and then retrain and reposition and rethink filling that spot. All these questions have to do with employee motivation and engagement. And my goal over the next few sessions is to unpack some of these challenges. At the end of our session tonight, if there's time, we're going to get you into small groups. I'm going to encourage you to mix with people that are not from your company. It'd be ideal to have at least four or five companies in a group. If you can get into groups of four or five at the end, as quickly as possible, and then we're going to have you kind of brainstorm and share some ideas that have worked for your individual companies. But we'll get to that. I want to help us understand how to build and maintain an environment where employees are both highly engaged and also motivating people around them. This requires us to have a short discussion on leadership and management. Now, I don't know how many of you in this room consider yourselves leaders and how many of you think, no, I'm more of a manager. Blanchard never liked to confuse the two. He thinks they're one and the same. Drucker, as you see in your notes, has a little bit different definition for each. Managers typically are hired to manage a process, keep people on the clock, everyone on schedule, and produce high-level services or products in a certain amount of time. That's what people say managers are. They're time conscious. They get things done. Leaders, on the other hand, they're just, you know, pie-in-the-sky dreamers. They sit around telling everybody else what to do. That's kind of the attitude that some managers have toward leaders. And to set the record straight on that, let me talk to you about leadership from Stephen Covey's perspective. How many of you remember Stephen Covey, Seven Habits? That was a popular book 20, 30 years ago. And his illustrations I really liked. And I lived in Southeast Asia, so maybe this is one reason why I love the first one. And that is with cutting a road through the jungle. If you know anything about jungles, they're very dense. They're very difficult to bust through. But just go back 70, 80 years, let's just say, in Southeast Asia, if you are trying to cut a road from China all the way down to Malaysia and Singapore, kind of connect all those tiger economies, and you've got those guys out there with the really big knives, okay, the skies, the machetes, the tools for cutting down the jungle. And if you're a manager, you're managing the process, right? You're making sure there's lots of water to keep those guys and gals, you know, well-watered because it's very hot. You don't want them to run out of water. You also have the big whetstones to grind the knives, keep them sharp. You are managing the process. It's very efficient, and you are whacking a road through the jungle. But one day, a young man who's a leader, he runs ahead of the pack, climbs the tallest tree. He surveys the jungle, and he yells out, "Wrong jungle!" They're headed off toward Myanmar/Burma and not down toward Malaysia and Singapore. And that's a problem, right? We're managing a process. We're going somewhere, but we're not headed in the right direction. And so a leader is all about setting the vision and the direction. We can't be going to the wrong jungle. The second metaphor that Covey uses is that of arranging deck chairs on the Titanic. And again, it kind of throws the managers under the bus, but make sure those chairs are nicely arranged. We don't want to disturb the customers, the passengers on the ship, with chairs sliding down the deck, right? But what's the leader saying? Noah, the Titanic. Get on the lifeboats, right? Get on the lifeboats, okay? The ship's going down. We don't really care about the deck chairs right now. And then, of course, there's always a few people, probably most of our employees, who are kind of looking at both leadership and management the way these guys at the bottom, you know? And, of course, the guy at the top says, believe me, guys, everyone from the Pharaoh on down is an equally valued member of the team. Yeah, right, say those slaves at the bottom. Now, obviously, this graphic could apply to both leaders and managers, but we don't believe in the old Egyptian model, do we? So let's get to Peter Drucker's definition. Leadership, he says, is doing the right things, all right? That's setting the vision and the direction. And then he says management is doing things right, doing it right, and they work hand in hand. We need both leaders and managers. They are combined in many regards. We probably play both leadership and management roles in the truest sense of leadership and management. We are all leaders and managers. So let me tell you a story from 300 years ago. And this comes from England, London, England, where the very famous architect for St. Paul's Cathedral, Sir Christopher Wren, showed up at the building site one day and just wanted to check on the construction. And there were three guys that he decided to interview about their work. He walked up to the first guy. And by the way, these workmen had no clue who he was. He was the famous architect, Sir Christopher Wren, but they had no idea that he was in their midst. And the first workman, when he was asked by Mr. Wren, "What are you doing here, sir?" he responded, "Are you blind? Can't you see? I'm laying blocks." Not a good concrete guy, by the way. Just note that. He walked up to the second guy and who was cutting a piece of stone, and he said, "What are you doing here, sir?" And the man said, "It's a job. I need the money to provide for my family." But when he walked over to the third laborer who was working with his shovel, he actually stepped back, leaned on his shovel, which typically is not a good thing, but in this case, he leaned back and looked up into the sky, and there was no riding edifice yet, but he proudly said, "Me, I'm helping Sir Christopher Wren build the world's greatest cathedral to the glory of God." Which one of those three was truly motivated in his job? They were all doing the same thing, but pretty obvious which one had been both led and managed to build a cathedral. He saw the vision, and he was proudly doing his part to build it. One must first have a vision to build a real structure, a real cathedral. And then secondly, we need a good system in place to make that vision happen. But how do we manage and how do we lead in such a way that our employees are like that third worker? That's the question. And so first of all, let me show you what leadership is not and why managers need to also become leaders. How many of you have seen this graphic before? All right, everyone's going to look like me when they come out on the other side. This, by the way, is not leadership development. Based on this image, what is one thing we know about engaging people? They're all different, and they need to be led and managed uniquely. We need to address the uniqueness of each person who works in our company. Otherwise, we'll ultimately fail. What motivates one? You all have, those of you that have children know what I'm talking about. What worked with one child certainly didn't work with the other, at least in our home. And it is true in our work environment as well. It takes leadership. It takes management according to the unique strengths, weaknesses, and propensities of each person on our team. Now, I'm a huge fan of John Maxwell. I want to just give you a real basic summary by John that he builds around the five levels of leadership. You maybe have seen this before. I think it's a great starting point on leadership. Leaders are concerned with people. People are our greatest asset, we said. and not just managing a process. And the first level, and you'll see in your notes there, you can fill out two different words. John loves to use the same letter to help as a reminder. So some of the words are going to start with R and some with the letter P. Great managers both lead and manage. The first level that we all start out at is the level of position. We have a title, we have a position, but our title and position will only take us so far. People follow because they have to, right? We hold the power of the paycheck. And your influence will not extend beyond the lines of your job description. The longer you stay here, the higher the turnover, the lower the morale. We all start out with a position as a leader. And people follow us because we have that right to ask them to follow us. We hold the paycheck. The second level is that of permission. Now people allow us to do certain things because they actually appreciate us based on the relationship that they have with us. People follow because they want to. This is a great place to lead. It's probably a place where many of us are already leading. We've got great relationships. The problem is, however, is if, and by the way, work to be fun. People have a relationship that's really, really good. The caution is staying too long in this level without rising will cause the motivated people in our companies to move on, all right, if we stay at that level. And so I always tell companies to go to the third or the fourth level. That's what we're really aiming for. And you might say, Luke, why not number five, the fifth level? That's where I want to go. Well, the fifth level is a level that is attributed to you if you've done three and four really well. Level three is results. We all need to lead from a production level. We need to be doing a great job of producing. People follow because of what you have done for the organization. I remember a number of years ago, Katzenbach and Smith in their epic book on teams pointed something out that was new to me, and it goes right along with this, that you know, sitting around a campfire holding hands singing Kumbaya or climbing rope ladders in trees is not the best way to build teams, okay? Sometimes we think that doing all these goofy team exercises is the best way to build a team. It's actually not. The best way to build a team is to produce results, to build a great company that actually is doing something, going somewhere. People love to be part of a success, and that will build teamwork more than anything else. And there's nothing wrong with climbing around in trees on rope ladders. It's just not the greatest team-building exercise results are. And this is where success is sensed by most people, okay? Results. They like you, and they like what you are doing. Problems are fixed with very little effort because of the big mo, momentum. And then the fourth level is beyond that. We call that, John calls that people development. People follow because of what you have done for them. You have developed them. You have helped them reach their potential. This is one of the highest motivators for people when they come to a company. You know, in the old days, people would stay at a company for 30, 40 years. Now people are moving from company to company to company. They're changing a lot. Here is low-hanging fruit, folks. If you and I can develop our people, if we can invest in them and help them become the best at life, whether it's at work or at home, in whatever capacity, we actually can keep retain our people. So people follow because of what you have done for them, and this is where long-range growth occurs. Your commitment to developing leaders will ensure ongoing growth of the organization and the people. Do whatever you can to achieve and stay on this level. And so that's where we want to focus. Most of our energies are on those two levels of leadership. And if you do that well over a long period of time, you will eventually reach what's called the pinnacle. In the number of years ago, John used to call this personhood. And this is the idea that we reach a place where people now begin to seek us out. And we're not even leading anything. We have no authority. We have no position anymore. But now people are seeking us out because of how well we have led in the past. So leaders are concerned with people, not just managing a process. People are our greatest asset. So let's talk about the needs of people, something that everyone shares in common. And this is where I'm actually going to close tonight. I want to look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Every one of us in this room, every one of our employees has a certain set of needs. American psychologist Abraham Maslow came up with this list of five basic human needs that is now referred to as Maslow's hierarchy. And basically what Maslow discovered is that we all start with a very fundamental need, which he called physiological. We have this instinctual desire to survive. We come out of the womb, we want a breath of air. And then we want to eat. And we want to eat and drink and breathe air. And that's our very basic primal need that every human being has. These are the most important to us. And if we can meet that need, then we will scale up to the next level. But only if that need is met. Now, in our companies, the way we meet that need is by paying a paycheck, right? We give a paycheck so that people can survive. They can buy food. I think air is still free. But for the most part, the paycheck meets the physiological needs. Second are people's safety needs. People want to do life safely. And everyone strives for personal security. This isn't just physical safety. This is also, you know, their retirements in mind, peace of mind, anxiety, financial security, health and well-being. They are going to try to meet their safety needs if their physiological have been taken care of. That's going to be their second most important need. And so we ought to focus on safety in our work environments. The third fundamental need of humanity is for love and belonging. Once people have had their physiological and their safety needs met, they will then start working on their relationships. Everyone desires to be loved, to belong. And the first context, of course, for all of us is your family, right? We are all born into families, and we know what it means to belong. And in our work environments, people want to be a part of the family at work. Connections are important. There's loyalties that are built. People desire friendship and their social connections and in their work connections. Acceptance among their peers, we say. They want to belong. So how do we bring people up to speed in our culture? That's a good question for us to answer. When a new person comes on, what do we do to actually bring them up to speed and help them to belong in our company? The fourth need has to do with esteem. And esteem is really broken down into two parts. There's the lower version and the higher version. The lower version is the one that we would call status, recognition, people wanting fame and prestige and in some cases, attention, okay? That's the lower version. That's not the one we want to focus on. When we talk about esteem, Maslow's on the positive side of this, he was talking about self-respect, self-respect. And this is the idea of strength, competence, mastery, self-confidence, independence, and freedom. People want to get really good at their work. They want to feel strong when they're working. They want to have self-confidence. They also want to experience, eventually, independence to do their work without you breathing down their neck, right? Nobody likes to be micromanaged going on year three, year four. In the beginning, micromanagement is good, right? Because you want to make sure you're training and keeping people from cutting off limbs and that type of thing. So there is a place for micromanagement at the beginning, but eventually they want independence. They want freedom. And this higher version takes precedence over the lower version because it relies on an inner competence established through experience. And then finally, the fifth need of human beings is for self-actualization. Self-actualization. And for those of us in a raised in a Mennonite worldview, I don't know how many of you know the term Gelassenheit. That's this idea of extreme humility that our Anabaptist forebears have passed on to us. It's a good thing. And so when we hear terms like self-actualization, some of us bristle at that. But this is more about realizing our full potential. People have bucket lists. People have things that they want to accomplish in life. They want to realize the full potential in their lives. They desire to accomplish everything that they can. They want to look back satisfied at what they did in life, their bucket list. They want significance, and they want to become the most that they can be. I'm sure all of you in here have some things on your bucket list. Whether you accomplish them all or not, at least get some of them, and you will have self-actualized. So how does this relate to engaging our employees? And I mean, that's really the golden question. So I want to just focus a bit on the top one, because I think sometimes when we look at those five, and maybe I should just ask the question, where do most companies focus their energy? Which needs do we typically focus our energy on? The bottom two. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, some of us are working on the love and belonging and the esteem, perhaps. But for the most part, safety and physiological is what we feel we are required to give. That's incumbent on us. So Let me just tell you a story, and this is not a real story. This is a makeup story. When I'm in Pennsylvania, I usually talk about John Martin. When I'm in Ohio, I usually talk about John Miller. So I just need to first check and see if there's a John Miller in the room, and then we'll go to John Yoder next. All right, no John Millers. Okay, so let's just say that you are running a company right along Route 39 going into Walnut Creek, Sugar Creek, Berlin, all those great towns. And this guy named John Miller works for you, and he's got, you know, a 10-acre plot right along Route 39. And as you get to know John, and you're paying him a paycheck, you're making sure he's got a safe environment, you've got him, you know, caught up with the team, and he's a great guy, you love John, he's very committed to your company. But one day over lunch, he shares with you that him and his wife have this 10-acre plot, and they really have a love affair with miniature ponies. They just love miniature ponies. They've got a dream. They've got a bucket list idea that they want to run a miniature pony farm along Route 39. A lot of tourists come through there. And so you're listening to John, and you're thinking, man, you mean you're going to leave me eventually, John? And this is not a good thing, right? You're the employer. But you listen to John, and the next week you just happen to be scanning the news, and you notice that up in Cleveland, there's actually a miniature pony conference coming to town. And you decide to buy Mr. John and his lovely wife tickets to go to that conference. And you get a hotel room for them. You get the meal vouchers at restaurants. And you just, you know, go all out to make sure that John has an amazing time at that conference. Which need are you starting to meet on John's list? The top one, yeah. And of course you might say, but Luke, that's gonna actually equip him to leave my company. Let me tell you something about John. John's not quite ready to leave yet, but when John comes back from that conference, he will be one of the most motivated, one of the most gung-ho employees that you've ever had. He will probably give his 120% from now on. Not only that, when the day comes, and by the way, John's going to leave anyhow someday, right? Let's just face the facts here. He's going to leave anyhow. When that day comes, he will probably train in the next person. He will probably motivate and encourage. He will probably be one of the greatest cultural builders at your organization. And then lastly, in all his work with miniature ponies in the future, he'll always be sending people to your business. He will probably become one of your best marketers, one of your best salespeople. And so reaching at the higher levels of human motivation and engagement can actually pay off for you as a company. What I'd like you to do right now is get into groups. And I'd like you to talk about Maslow's hierarchy. I would like you to talk about practical ideas that maybe came to your mind as you were listening tonight. We're going to take about 10, 15 minutes before we go for dessert and just talk about some very practical ideas on how we can motivate and engage our employees. How can we actually focus on those top three needs in our companies? And if you're already doing this, I'd like you to share some of those practical ideas with each other, all right? And if we have time at the end, maybe we'll even pass the mic around, and one of you can share some of the ideas that came up in your group. So why don't we plan on that? Let's go for about 5-10 minutes, and then we'll get, Scott, you got the mic still? We'll have you run around, and we'll have a spokesperson share some of the top ideas that came out of your groups. So let's do this. Let's get into our groups first. And then give me your attention as soon as you get into your groups, and I'll help you choose a group leader. All right? So let's get into our groups quickly. 4 or 5 people per group, and preferably different companies.